Haven't they been fantastic in worship? Guys, thank you so much. And we're not even done yet, so they're gonna get some more time tonight just to lead us. But hey, it's been an absolute delight to be with you. Night one, we talked about Ananias, and if we want more Pauls, then we need some more Ananiases, and how the supernatural always begins when we say yes to God. And then last night, we talked about the relationship between Paul and Timothy, and just how Paul was able to call out the best of Timothy, and just the beauty of knowing your commanding officer, knowing your playbook, and going after the right harvest. Well, today I want to just start and tell you about a Dutch scientist. It was during the 17th century, and his name was Zans Ingsenhouse. It's a real person. This is a real story. Now, Zans Ingsenhouse realized something, that when you brought a plant inside, it died. Wasn't used to it. Wasn't kind of this thought was, if a plant had adequate soil and good water, it would grow. But it didn't. He couldn't really figure this out, so he began to study, he began to research, and he began to realize that more is going on than actually meets the eye. And he discovered photosynthesis. Now, what I want to do is I want to take you back to 10th grade biology class just for a moment, and I want to explain to you what photosynthesis is in a very condensed kind of way. Now, photosynthesis actually means from the light. It's just beautiful, and it all comes from the light. Now, for photosynthesis to work, you need water. There's some high-quality H2O. Whew. Now, you've got water. You need some humans. You need some soil, you need some good plants, and you also need the sun, okay? So you got a sun, and this sun gives off light. Now, the light is this energy. So you got a sun, gives off light, the light's an energy, and the leaves capture this light, okay? So you got a sun, gives off light, light's an energy, and the leaves capture the light. They capture this energy, but what do? This energy breaks up the two atoms of hydrogen and the one atom of oxygen. Okay, so the two atoms of hydrogen kind of stay within the plant, and then the plant releases the oxygen for us. Thank you. Now, what's amazing is when we inhale, what do we breathe? Very well. When we exhale, what do we give off? Yes, all right. So here's the deal. When we breathe, our carbon dioxide mixes with the two atoms of hydrogen, makes a sugary substance called glucose that feeds the plant. This is photosynthesis. This is kind of amazing. If you just think about this, just for a moment. I went mountain bike riding today. I went down, I parked in Juvenile Hall, which was awesome. Haven't been there for a while. But then I crossed the street, and we start riding, and there's just these massive redwoods. I mean, there was a redwood that Teddy Roosevelt, like back in the day, stood in front of. And if you actually know the story of this, he was on a train, and it was like the beginning of the Secret Service. And Teddy just said, "Stop the train." And they stopped the train, and he just took off running. And he left his Secret Service. They couldn't find him for a day. And then they found him, and he took a picture in front of the tree. Now, but if you think about this tree, right? Just in this like amazing, amazing, beautiful, profound sense of nature. And the way that God's made us is that every day I breathe and I give life to nature. But I guarantee you, none of you woke up today and you're like, you know what I'm going to do today? I'm going to bring my A game to breathing. Like, there you go, little buddy. Stay green. Stay fresh. Like, none of you do. You just passively breathe. And by just passively breathing, the way that God has wired you is to give life. Without you even knowing it, whether you are deep, deep, true, fully devoted disciple, or you are just kind of in a dark, hard season, and as a disciple, or want nothing to do with God, God has wired and made you, without you even knowing it, to be someone who gives life. Let's take it even farther. The Jewish faith, the language of the Jewish language, Hebrew, it's profound, if any of you have ever studied it. There's 22 Hebrew alphabets. There's no vowels. 19 of the Hebrew alphabet letters have sounds. 3 of them do not.
And the three that don't have any sense or semblance of sound is the letters Yod, He, and Vav. Now, if you go to different unique rabbis and just sit with them and you ask them about Yod, He, Vav, you add another He to it and you get the name Yahweh, and that's like the most holy name. Rabbis won't even say it. If they say it, they're covering their head or lifting their pinky because it's so holy, it's so revered. But those letters that make up the name Yahweh, Lawrence Kushner, this profound rabbi in San Francisco, he says, there's no sound. It's the sound of breathing. But the way that God wired you is that every time you breathe, you say a letter that makes up the holiest name ever. Just think about this for a second. Every time you breathe, Yahweh. You're giving life to nature and you are saying the most holy, profound name, Yahweh. And you're sitting with someone across the table, they're breathing, and they're like, there's no such thing as God. And you're like, yeah, you just said his name like 9 different times. And people say it. And I just want you to understand, this is how God made you. God made you to give worth. God made you to give life. God made you deep, deep within, whether you know it or not, to be someone who blesses, who gives. But the question is, did God really want us just to be passive partners with him? At the end of our life, will God be like, hey guys, well done, man. You gave life to nature and you said my name. I did all of that without you knowing it, but like you did pretty good breathing. I think God would say, no, I put this in you. I wanted you to get so connected to how I wired you and made you so that it would overflow into every area of your life, that in every area you would want to give worship and worth to me. With your gifts, with your time, with your resources, give worship and honor to me. And with your gifts and your resources and your time, give life to other people. I think God desperately longs that we would be active participants with him and giving life and bringing life and bringing honor to the one true God. Now, before the Hebrew people entered into the promised land, God had a command for them. If you have a Bible, you can turn with me to Deuteronomy chapter 30. Some of you probably know this passage. It's one of my favorites in Scripture. But in verse 11, there are these words. It begins with this. Now, what I'm commanding you today is not too difficult for you or beyond your reach. Okay. It is not up in heaven so that you have to ask who will ascend into heaven to get it and proclaim it to us so we may obey it. Nor is it beyond the sea so that you have to ask who will cross the sea to get it and proclaim it to us so we may obey it. No. And just hear this. Hear this just tonight. Receive this tonight. No, the word is very near to you. It's in your mouth. It's in your heart so you may obey it. Verse 15, see, I set before you today life and prosperity, death and destruction, for I command you today to love the Lord your God, to walk in obedience to him, and to keep his commands, decrees, and laws. Then you will live and increase, and the Lord your God will bless you in the land you are entering to possess. But if your heart turns away, and you're not obedient, if you're drawn away to bow down to other gods and worship them, I declare to you this day that you will certainly be destroyed. You will not live long in the land you are crossing the Jordan to enter and possess. See, what's he saying here? He's saying, hey, I'm giving you a choice. I want you to participate in what I'm doing. I want you to do it with me. And then it even gets better. Verse 19, this day I call the heavens and the earth as witnesses against you that I have set before you life and death, blessings and curses. Now choose life so that you and your children may live and that you may love the Lord your God. Listen to his voice and hold fast to him, for the Lord is your life. And he will give you many years in the land he swore to give your fathers Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. So here's what he says. I've set before you heaven and earth as witnesses. So this is like a binding agreement to the ancient Near East. You needed to have two witnesses for a contract. And who are the witnesses? Heaven and earth. I mean, she's like so cosmic. See, today I said before you, heaven and earth, these are these witnesses. I said before you, life and death, blessings and destruction. And then he says, now choose life. Now, this word choose in Hebrew is a fascinating word. It's the word bahar. And what it literally means is what you choose, you boldly proclaim is the best possible way to live. I don't know if we think about this. But to the Hebrew people, every choice mattered. Every choice that we made said something about who our God is. Every choice and decision that we made is an opportunity to showcase what grace and truth and peace is. An anthropologist would say that every one of us has 35,000 choices that we make on a regular day, from getting up in the morning and hitting snooze, and 8 minutes later, hitting it again, and then waking up and then deciding what cereal. And all of a sudden, it's just choice after choice after choice after choice. And many of us, we make choices just on autopilot. And yet the whole essence of what God was trying to communicate is as you enter in this land, I don't want to be a passive participant in your life. I want to actively partner with you in the restoration and the redemption of all things. And here's the thing. We get to choose if we want that. God says, I set before you today life and death and blessings and destruction. And every day, you get to choose that. I get to choose. Do I want to just be someone who and says, Yod Heh Vav Heh? Or do I want every word that comes out of my mouth, every way that I view money and view culture and view my neighbor as a chance to partner with God and choose life? When you talk about the invitation of life, it's not just every once in a while making an invitation to a church or an invitation to a camp. No. This is about you being shaped and formed as a disciple of Christ. This is about you going deep with Jesus and recognizing every choice matters to the Father. Now, how do we choose life? And I want to get really, really practical for you today. Because I want you to leave with something. I can teach you and try and inspire you with an Ananias story or kind of this Paul and Timothy story, but I really want to just kind of share with you, for me, what the framework is to live an invitational life. And it's just kind of four movements, and I'll just kind of rattle them off right now. It's live, show up, relate, and risk. Live, show up, relate, and risk. Now, here's the thing. When we talk about invitational living, yes, I'm talking about evangelism. And I honestly think that for many people, evangelism is the most beautiful word, and for a number of people, it's like a disease. And really, there's like a generational divide. And let me just kind of break this down and explain it. Something happened, and where I feel as if I'm going to give you a history of evangelism in the last 80 years, just for a moment, okay? So just bear with me for a second. If I could break down what evangelism has been, it's been based on one word, end. Now, there's an eschatology end, which could be found in one great profound question that I was asked in seventh grade that began the transformation of my heart, my soul, my mind, my eternity, my journey with Jesus. And it was this. Maybe you were asked it too. If your life were to come to an end, where would you go? Now, it's a great question. But underneath that question, there's a whole bunch of things that are underneath it. Number one, sin. Sin. You've got sin in your life, and you've not confessed that and not repented of it and not said yes to Christ, you are going somewhere else. You're going to hell. Sin, death, right? You're going to die if your life were to come to an end. Boom. Underneath that, all based like on like fact of the scriptures, it was basically an avoidance of the negative. Who wants to go to hell? That's what, when these 11th graders told me this, I was like, I don't want to go there. What do I got to do? What do I got to do? There's a sense of fear to it and a bit of reverence. It's all predicated on the beauty of Calvary and the cross. And it's this picture of heaven. And it's based on the Holy Scriptures, on the Holy Bible. Now, something happened, though. Something happened in the late 90s. You started to see these semi-trucks go into low-income neighborhoods, and they'd open up the semi-truck, and they'd lower out a stage, and there'd be speakers, and they'd start playing, like, three chords and worship songs. Then they'd have this hired gun get up, and he'd speak, and he'd preach. Some hands would raise. They would be so fired up about it, and then they'd pray, and then they'd load everything up in the semi-truck, and they'd never go back to that low-income neighborhood. Some like college students started to really wrestle, and they go, but I think that kid needs to be discipled. I think that kid's parents need some mentors, some job training. And something began to shift in the 90s and the aughts, the early 2000s, where you began to see this eschatology version of evangelism get pushed to the side and an ethical version of evangelism rise up. And the ethical version was based on this. We want to end poverty. We want to end sex trafficking. We want to end anything that is broken in these neighborhoods. And it took on. Gen Xers, millennials, all of a sudden they were like, we want to serve. Now, if this one was based on like death, this was based on life. If this one was based on sin, this ethical evangelism was based on grace. If this one was based on fact, this one was based on story. If this one was based on the avoidance of the negative, this one was all based on the sense that you were made for more. It was the affirmation of the positive. This one was based on heaven. This one was based on the kingdom of heaven. This one was based on the Holy Bible. This one was based on the Holy Spirit. And what you ended up having was a profound divide when it came to evangelism. And you had one group who were the proclaimers and one group who were the demonstrators, and the proclaimers would look at the demonstrators and go, hey, that's awesome that you're doing all of that stuff in that neighborhood and like trying to end poverty and doing all that, but why don't you say the name Jesus? And this person would say, we preach all the time. If necessary, we'll use words. And then the proclaimers would be like, well, why aren't you telling people about hell and telling people about sin? Do you get it? Do you understand? This one was so based on the cross. That was so based on resurrection. And they would just sit there and they would find themselves being divided. And this side would go, you're either afraid to say the name Jesus and talk about sin, or you're a universalist. And all of a sudden, this side was like, well, why are you just talking about it? Live it. And can I be honest? They're both half stories. They're both not telling the entirety of the scriptures. I'm going to break the scriptures down into four acts right now. The entirety of the Bible can be summed up, if you thought of it as a play, four acts. Creation, where God had the chaos and how the goodness of his just profound sense of being looked in and began to speak life, and he made creation. He shaped it and formed it. What was just formless and empty, he formed and gave meaning and gave purpose, and he called it good. Then Genesis 3, the fall. And everything got distorted. God's intent got distorted, and sin entered in, and it messed everything up. I don't hate anything but sin. It breaks my heart. I've seen it ransack marriages. I've seen addiction rise up in my closest friends. I've seen what sin can do around me and in me. And then the cross, the death, the life of Jesus, his kingdom teachings, his death, his burial, and his resurrection was the redemption of our sins. And then the emergence of the Spirit of God unleashed in the local church to join with God in the restoration of all things. I'll tell you this, the proclaimers, you had creation, fall, redemption, restoration. The proclaimers, we were the best at the fall and redemption. And this is the story we told. And we told it well. And the demonstrators, they only told the creation and restoration story. You're good, but you were made for more. Let's redeem and restore this. And friends, I'm telling you this. The world is desperate to see the whole gospel, the fullness, people who proclaim the entirety, and they see the good of someone. They see the Imago Dei. They want to call it out. They want to learn someone's fall, someone's struggle. They want to be on their knees begging God for how the cross and the resurrection makes sense of their sin and their brokenness and their struggle. And they dream of the day where someone can be filled with the Spirit of God, unleashed to join with God, participate with God in the restoration of all things. That's the kind of evangelist we need today. We don't need half stories. The disciples, this is what Jesus taught. This is what Jesus wanted. So if you're going to choose life to live this invitational life, it begins with how you live. Sometimes with evangelism, we've made it a ministry. We've kind of divorced it from discipleship. And the greatest evangelists I know are just disciples who go deep with Jesus. It's John 15, right? And Jesus says, I'm the vine, you are the branch. Apart from me, you can do nothing, but with me, you'll bear much fruit. But I don't know, oftentimes in my life, I look at Jesus and I say, I'm the vine, and Jesus, you're a branch. And I think we get it wrong sometimes. And I wonder often, do we really believe that apart from Jesus, we can actually produce sustainable fruit? And when you begin to live deep with Jesus, you begin to carry the heart of Jesus. You begin to see what the Father taught Jesus, and you begin to go, I want that. I want kingdom eyes. I want to sit. I want to stop. I want to look face to face. I want to see the good. I want to listen to the pain. I want to hear the ache. I want to fight for the good and fight for the need. I want to contend for the beauty of this person, because that's what Jesus did. It starts with how you live. The second is about how you show up. You heard me say this on night one. Every environment is brimming with redemptive potential. Every environment. God is here. As God is in the gas station down the road, as God is at In-N-Out, of course he's at In-N-Out, but like God is there. And yet so many times we just go through unaware of his presence. And when you find yourself living this like invitational life, you cultivate it. You show up going, God, what are you up to? What are you stirring? What do you want to happen right now? I'm waiting 9 minutes for a coffee. God, what could happen? Who do you want me to have a conversation with? And when you begin to fix your gaze on what God wants to do, it changes you. You live, you show up, and when you show up, you're always going to be pushed towards the thing that matters most to God. And it's not power. It's not money. It's not stuff. It's not your title. It's people. And when you begin to go deep with Jesus, you show up with expectancy. You're dependent on Jesus, expectant for him to stir in you. It's always going to force you to people. And you get the chance to build relationships. You get to know people's stories. The creation, the fall, the praying for the redemption, dreaming and having visions about what the restoration could be like for this person. Live, show up, relate. And I could paint and point you to so many stories in the scriptures where Jesus modeled these three. And then the fourth, it will lead you to risk. Risk it all for what matters most. And for me, risk is an acronym. I don't know, maybe it's because I'm a teacher and you basically taught that acronyms are the best way, but they're helpful for me. And risk for me is something that I challenge our church to do on a regular basis. One, because it pushes us outside our comfort zone. But two, it pushes us into an invitation to go deeper in our trust and dependency with Jesus. And the first, letter of risk, R, represents rescued people, rescue people. And this became massively apparent to me on my 10-year anniversary. I took my wife, we'd been saving up for a couple years, and we went to Hawaii. I had never been to Hawaii before. We rented this condo out on the point of this cove. And we're out grilling one day, and at the bottom of this cove, it was really great. It was awesome because when it was low tide, you could just stand and put goggles on. You could look, and just the fish and the turtles. It was just amazing. And every once in a while, the tides, there'd be a sea change, and bigger waves would come, which was fun. I'd get the surfboard out and start surfing. You could sit out and kind of on your deck, and you'd watch whales breach, and it was just stunning. God's creation is so magnificent. It's probably 5:30, and we're just grilling out, and all of a sudden, I heard this shriek, "Help!" And I looked down at the cove, and I just saw this woman, this hands. And I looked out, and I could see a set of waves coming in that were like 6-7 feet, and the sea change had happened. And I realized here was someone who could stand when it was low tide, but couldn't swim. And I don't know what came over me. I don't know if it was the David Hasselhoff within me, but I just took off running. And I just took off. And I had to go through 3 condo associations. I jump a fence, I take off running. I jump another fence, I take off running. I'm going around. And all I can think about is when my friends who were lifeguards growing up, and they were Christian guys, and they'd kind of gather their guys together at their points, and they'd just say, "Hey, not on our watch today. No one dies on our watch. We keep watch, no one dies on our watch." And so I'm thinking about that. It's in my head. I'm like, "Not on my watch, God." I take my shirt off. I just dive in and I just start going. And I start pushing and pushing to get out to this woman. I get to this woman, kind of put her on my back, and I just start bringing her in. And as I'm bringing her in, I'm carrying her in, and I see her 6-year-old son just coming to her, weeping. 11-year-old coming in, weeping. I put her on the sand. She starts to breathe, thanks be to God, and she's okay. And she gets up, and a guy walks up to me with a Corona in his hand. He's like, "Way to go, dude. High five." And I was like, "Thanks." And then I look up. I look up at the cove where I had started, and there's 50 people standing on the cove just watching. And then God, as my walking back, he just starts to kind of impress upon my heart, how many times have you been on the cove and you just watched someone drown? Someone drowning in their finances, drowning in their marriage, drowning in addiction, drowning in questions of faith, drowning and not actually done a thing. And yet, this time, you don't even know this woman's name and you took off running, and there's so many people in your life whose name you do know, but you just are like them. And it was, I'll be honest, one of the most holy conviction moments of my life. And I was feeling I'm awesome, right? I did Hasselhoff. This is gonna be made into a movie or something. This is a Hallmark story, right? And God was like, "This is every day, man." I went up to where we were, and I just grabbed my Bible, and I just started reading, and I called it the riskology. I wanted to see the stories of Jesus just risking it all for what mattered most. Story after story after story after story after story after story after story, and I didn't stop, and I just kept reading, and I kept reading about Paul, and the story after story after story, and all of a sudden, I found myself going, "Man, this is it. Rescued people, rescue people." And when we talk about choosing life, it's about doing whatever we can to rescue people who are drowning. I, I call them invitational fails. Now, here's the thing. I think you got to normalize living an invitational life, because I think that we put so much pressure on ourselves and we Jedi mind trick ourselves. I don't know how to have a conversation. What do I say to them? What if it doesn't go well? Oh my goodness. And so what we love is actually service projects, because it feels good to give someone something and they're thankful to receive it, and I leave feeling better about myself. And it's not always awesome and easy, but I think a lot of the times I don't get rejected handing someone something that they need. They don't go, no, I don't want that. They go, thank you. And then all of a sudden you try to have this conversation where you invite someone maybe for coffee, or invite someone to your church, or invite someone to like learn a little bit more about the gospel, or invite someone to share, and they just don't go there. And all of a sudden you're like, I must have done it wrong. And the enemy just goes after you. And so what we started to do in our culture was just say, we're going to celebrate invitational fails. And what we're going to do is, when we sense God stirring and we take a risk, we are going to just go nuts about it. Because I think oftentimes we don't know how to tell those stories of God at work. And so we started doing this. We planted a church in Fullerton, and we started to like go after this. And so we do our core meetings, and we're like, invitational fail, who's got one? Guy raises his hand. He's like, I got one. I was like, oh, what do you got, Tim? He's like, you guys know I work in an IT firm, and my boss stopped by my office and stuck his head in and asked me if I had finished my reports. And I just said, what are you doing Sunday? He goes, watching football. He's like, awesome. You want to go to church? No. And then he walked by, and we're like, yeah, dude, you went for it. That's amazing. And the whole room just goes nuts. We go to another person. They start telling, yeah, oh my goodness, it's amazing. Go to another, yes. And all we were trying to do is say, you're not going to hit 100%. And again, go through your Dodgers roster. Go through the Giants roster. Go through the Cubs roster. Nobody's hitting better than 320. And really, they're getting paid millions of dollars to only get on base 32% of the time. So lower the pressure. And honestly, it's not about you. And we make it about us. So we just had fun with it. Let's just, oh my goodness, you went for it. I can't believe you did it. That's amazing. And yet, we said, you know what we want to be about? Hearing the whisper and the prompting of God and saying yes, because you never know when God's going to do something. Buddy of mine, Jose, he's a car salesman. Don't hold that against him. But Jose, he hears this whisper from God. It's at the end of the month. Hears this whisper from God. He can't believe it, because he feels like God tells him to do something, and he's like, it can't be God, it can't be God. Here's what it was. Let me just set the stage. In one day, if they sold, this Nissan dealer sold 8 cars, they would break their record of most cars ever sold in a month. And the general manager was like, I think we can do it. And he goes, and the general manager starts looking around, goes, how many cars can you sell today? How many cars can you sell today? And Jose senses God tells him to try and sell 4. The most he's ever sold in one day is 2. And so he goes, I got 4, but it's a deal. I got to make a deal. The general manager's like, if you sell 4 cars, I'll do anything. He goes, if I sell 4 cars, you got to come with me to the Willows Creek Christmas service. And this guy's like, done. He's like, all right. Jose leaves. He gets on the horn. And by 10 a.m., he sold 2 cars. Unbelievable. He's like, I can't believe this is happening. Then he goes for a drought until 5 p.m. For 7 hours, there's nothing. 5 p.m., he sells his 3rd car. And he's like, I can't believe this. This could happen. But he only has about 45 more minutes, and then it's just silent. Silent. It's silent. And he's praying, and he's pacing, and he's like, three cars is still pretty good, but I said four, and you told me, God, you told me, come on, come on, come on, man, we're so close. 5:53, this guy walks in and goes, is there a Jose here? Jose's like, yeah, that's me. I'm Jose. He's like, hey, you sold a car to a buddy of mine, and my car just blew out. I just need to buy a Nissan Sentra. Jose's like, yeah, this guy's just going around. Does it. He ends up texting his boss going, four cars, we broke the record. What service are you going to? Crickets. Next day, Jose shows up. General manager calls him. He's like, oh, okay, here's my chance. I've memorized all 9 services. I'm going to tell him. He's going to choose one. It's going to be awesome. Sits down. General manager pulls out his checkbook and goes, how much do you want your bonus to be? Now, just stop for a second. Cash or conviction? Because some of you all would be tempted right here, like, I did my part. I'll take a bonus. And Jose goes, I want that. But we had a deal, and I want that more. And the general manager goes, I'm not going to your stupid service. Slams his hand down and walks out of his own office. So Jose's just sitting there going, well, what do I do? And so he stays put. It's so awesome. He's just sitting there. And he's just like, and he's just wrestling. It's so human. It's so human because he's just sitting there going like, did I mess this up? He left his checkbook. Should I still like, did I take a check? I mean, like, what do I do, right? And he's just feeling it. And he's just sitting there. He's like, and then finally, general manager walks back in. And he goes, Jose, you're right. We had a deal. And I'm going to honor that deal. But here's my deal. If I got to go, then all these jokers have to go too. So on December 23rd, 2016, 131 people from the local Nissan dealership, friends and family, came. And we sit here, we go, man, are you kidding me? But where did that begin? With a whisper. Why? Because Jose lived deep with Jesus. He shows up with expectancy. He's built these relationships, and he believes rescued people. And there might be an invitational fail story, or there might be something more. Rescue people. There's invitational fails, and then here's the S. And this one I get most fired up about because here's the truth. Many of you in this room are living off an only God story that happened decades ago. You were living off the stories of the past. And I'm telling you, God, and all of his goodness and all of his kindness. And he wants to use you today, this week. And what we challenge our people is rescue people. We're going to have invitational fails. But here's what we want to do. We want to do our very best to tell only God stories that happen, here's the S, every 7 days. I don't want to be telling stories that happened 14 years ago, and some of them are awesome. I want to push myself. I want to pray so badly. I want to be so desperate for God to move. I want to believe that in this conversation, God might do something. And the question is, when's the last time you've had an only God story? And what if, just what if? What if you believed? I want to tell stories that happened the last 7 days. How much material would you have? And when you start talking about cultivating a life of living this kind of finding invitation, inviting people into your life, inviting people into the church, the family of God, inviting people into the gospel and the good news. Man, if you are just choosing life and every choice is this opportunity to actively participate with what God's doing, you find yourself on your tippy toes, just longing, wondering, could this conversation, man, God, what are you going to do? 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 But if you're like me, too often you're like, I just need my coffee. I just need to get my gas. I just need to get this. And everything's pragmatic and everything is efficient and everything is on time. Except the gospel. I just want to just challenge you. I'll tell you this story because, and it breaks my rule because it's so, hold me to that, but it's like 30 days ago. And here's the moment. It was at the end of the week. And I didn't have an Only God story. And so my son, or sitting at the table, my son's like, Dad, what's the Only God story? And I was like, I don't have one. He goes, you don't have one? I'm like, you got one? He goes, I think so. I was like, what? He goes, so I've been listening to this artist. I was like, yeah. His name's Andy Mineo. I was like, oh, all right. Okay. Well done, son. And he goes, and I just found out he's doing a show. And so I invited two of my friends, Nico, great name, and Brody, better name, and all of a sudden, and they said they'll go to the show. And I'm like, where's the show? Grand Rapids. I'm like, that's 4 hours away. Yeah, but we could like go to Blue Papa's house. That's my dad. And I'm like, oh, did you already ask him? Yeah. Who's taking them? We thought you would. It's like, awesome. And you invited him. Yeah. And I was like, okay, great. And I loved it. I wasn't even mad. I was like, it's like, awesome. You invited guys who don't have any church and you want them to like experience Andy Mineo. And so we went and it was amazing. But anyways, I'm like, okay, I had to get takeout. So I go to get takeout to this little Mexican restaurant called Lily's. And I'm walking in there and I'm thinking about my son inviting his friends to this concert. And I'm like, awesome. Gosh, I want to be more like that. And I'm walking in, and the door opens, and this woman comes out, and she's like, hey, I know you. And I was like, oh, hi, I'm Steve. And she goes, I know. Do you remember me? I'm like, oh, I hate that question. give me a hint. And she's like, I've been going to Willow for about 6 months. I'm like, oh, that's awesome. Well done. And I just got baptized. And I'm like, that's even cooler. Well done. That's amazing. Tell me more. She's like, 2 years ago, you went into the Lucky Monk. And that's like this pub, like restaurant. It's really great, like burgers and gastro pub. And I sat down at the bar and I was like ordering some food, takeout, because that's where you order the takeout. And I was just sitting there and the bartender came up and she just, you can tell a lot by looking at someone's eyes. And you look at their eyes, you can tell if someone's sad. Anytime you look at someone's eyes, you can tell, is their life, is their soul, is their heart or heartache or pain. Look at her eyes, I can just see. I just said, and this is what, I didn't remember this. This is what she said. She's like, you asked me, what's one thing that's good that's happening in my life? And it caught me off guard because I said nothing. And then you kind of looked at me and we had a little conversation and you said, I'm going to be hoping that you experience some good. And then you told me that you're going to be praying that I experience some good. And then we had a little bit of conversation and then I decided because somebody else invited me to Willow that I would go. And I walked in. And I sit down, and then you get up out of a worship set to pray, and you start by quoting a passage of scripture. I don't even know where it is, but you said that if we taste and see that the Lord is good. And all of a sudden, God just spoke to me, and I was like, I know that voice, and it reminded me of you. And all of a sudden, like, she's telling me this whole thing. And then as she's saying all this stuff, it hit me. I remember leaving the Lucky Monk that day going, that was a total invitational fail. And I was like, what a dumb question.
What's one thing that's good in your life?
Like, just, like, I, so dumb. And I was like, come on, man. And like, I drove away. And then in this moment, she's telling me, And here's the thing I realized. One, I had an only God story to go tell my son and like one up him. But two, in this moment, I realized there are times we think we fail. And God's like, no. No. And here's the piece. Our job is to throw seeds and to cast seeds wherever we go. And the truth is, many of us have a whole bunch of seeds of grace, right? We have all these. I love what Dallas Willard says. He goes, you know what? We ought to burn through grace faster than any sinner could, because grace never runs out. And we ought to be the people who are just casting seeds. But many times, some of us are like, we're like Barney Fife with like a bullet. I got one seed. We can go after Stanton over here. Just make sure the soil's ready. Just gonna get it and just water it and just put it in there. Like, that's like literally like we're so careful. And all of a sudden, like, man, we should be the kind of people who are inviting people, calling out the best in people. Rescued people, rescue people. You're going to have invitational fails. But friends, what if we were a people who committed our challenge, our staff teams this summer? Have an only God story every 7 days. And let's get back and let's huddle and let's tell him. And then, because it inspires me, it inspires you, it lifts the spirits of the team, and it makes us believe that God isn't static and up there, but God is alive and in our midst. And then the K, it gets you on your knees praying. And when you know someone who's far from God, and you know someone who's wrestling through some difficult things in their marriage and in their past and trauma and pain, it brings you to your knees to pray. And the more that you pray, the more your heart becomes like God's. And in that, man, God does a work. And so, how are you cultivating a life of invitation? Are there faces that maybe have been coming to mind over the last few days? Are there places that you could actually start to see yourself as the pastor of? The pastor of this Starbucks. The pastor of this local diner. And when I walk in, I am going to be someone who looks for the good, who looks for the need, who does whatever it takes to cast as many seeds as possible. Because rescue people, and there will be invitational fails, and they'll be awesome, and there will be only God stories, and they'll even be more awesome. And I am going to be on my knees praying. And I'm going to be someone who carries the full gospel as a proclaimer, as a demonstrator, because I go deep with Jesus. That's what I want for you. That's what I believe that God wants for you. Not to just be someone who breathes, passively partnering with God, but with every area of your life, with every part of your story, actively partnering to choose life and to choose to point people to the one in whom life, all life, is found, and that's Christ. Let's pray. God, thank you for what you're stirring. Thank you for what you are stirring. And again, I just think in these moments, for many of us, we're either people who want to lean in and say, God, give us only God stories. Fresh God stories. And God, I pray just even in this response time, that you would flood our minds, you'd flood our hearts with people. Maybe we don't even know their names right now, but they're people that we've seen. And maybe we just need to make a decision and a commitment that, man, we're going to live and we're going to show up for them because you and somebody showed up for me. God, we don't want to be the kind of people who hold our light to ourselves. He told us what our purpose was. To be the salt of the earth and to the light of the world. Every conversation were to add flavor. Every conversation were to help people. And God, I pray that like our lights would just shine. Our love would just be seen. That people would recognize the Christ that is at work in us. Give us a heart for people like you have it. And let us risk it all for what matters most to you.